Greetings, greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. Hey, you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. It is the weekly worldview. I'm your host, Doug McBurney, joined in studio, as always, by my extremely attractive audio engineer. So I'm already distracted. All right. No, we're here. It's the show. This is the show. This is the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do help focus you on the events of the week through all of that original thought. Yes. And here we are. We're on the cusp of the most important midterm elections ever. Since the Grecian Republic of 3,000 years ago, there hasn't been the midterms back then paled in comparison in importance. It's as if we're on the cusp of the Peloponnesian War, and it's so important. These midterm elections are so important that Donald Trump actually brought out the first string at a rally today. I just read that. Well, you know, Sean Hannity's been following Trump around. He sets up a little tent there. I don't know. Maybe he does palm readings. I don't know what he's following Trump around lately. Today, Limbaugh was up there. Forget the second stringer. The real thing out there. In the hustings. On the hustings, how does that go? We'll figure all that out as we move forward. But we want to start in the doing right file, because when people do right, we like to give them credit. And a contract has been awarded to SLS Co. Limited down in the Rio Grande Valley in Texas. A contract for $145 million to begin construction of the border wall. Donald Trump's Great Wall is going to start in the Rio Grande Valley in South Texas. $145 million. I wonder how much wall you get these days for $145 million. 18 feet tall it's going to be. Yes, well, I'll just read to you from the Breitbart report. The project calls for the construction to include 18 feet tall steel bollard walls placed on top of reinforced sections of concrete levee walls. They're going to dig down into the ground and pour concrete, and then 18 feet up. Mike, I don't know, $145 million. What does a wall cost? $1 million a foot? I have no idea. Anyway, so Donald Trump's doing the right thing. We should build a wall along the southern border, and I had expressed some doubt that he would even build the wall. But apparently, they're at least going to build $145 million worth of it. Down there in the Rio Grande, and congratulations, President Trump. We appreciate you doing the right thing. Now, I haven't addressed the border lately, and I haven't addressed the caravan. The caravan of illegals, they're on their way. They're already illegal. You know, they crossed into Mexico illegally. Which is strange. You would think that since they're on TV that the Mexican authorities would at least be embarrassed and then do something. I don't know. I think they denied them buses. Anyway, there's a couple reasons I haven't addressed the migrant caravan is because this happens all the time. These caravans are a regular occurrence. They've been going on for decades. It's not that unusual. But I think for some reason this time, because of these extremely important midterm elections, for some reason, the medicated wizards over at the mainstream media, CNN, MSNBC, CBS, ABC, NBC, Fox, did I forget anyone? The NPR. For some reason, they thought that video footage of thousands and thousands of migrants marching toward the southern border, they thought somehow that would help the left in the election, which is possibly one of the biggest political miscalculations in the history of political miscalculations, and they go way back. So anyway, but I'm not for, I don't think people should be allowed to just walk across the border, ask for asylum, and then be released out into the general population. I think we should have facilities to house such people. And their cases should be adjudicated rapidly. We should have an infrastructure that can adjudicate an asylum request in about 3 days. And for those 3 days, you're in a cot, in a tent, or I don't know, something like that. A Quonset hut. And then we're sending you back to Honduras or El Salvador or whatever other wonderful third world developing nation that you're trying to escape from. Or if you're like the lady in Pakistan, then we would let you come. In fact, we'll get to the lady in Pakistan, Asia Bibi. We'll get to her. It's amazing how the medicated geniuses in the mainstream media obsess over 5,000 young men approaching our border and how we have to bow and scrape and let them in. But they won't say a peep about Asia Bibi in Pakistan, the Christian woman. Well, we'll get to that because we're going to talk about Asia Bibi and we're going to talk about asylum and all that. As for the all-important, critical, crucial midterm elections, we don't really care that much. Because no matter what happens, not much is going to change. Should I make any predictions? Do I even care enough to make a prediction? I don't care enough to make a prediction. And if I'm going to say anything, if I'm going to make any predictions, I'm going to wait until after the election. Because I'll have a much better chance of being accurate. All right. Whitey Bulger is dead. Yes, see, the system works. For whoever the hack is who wrote my review there on the iTunes podcast page said I was a hack and I stole everything from Bob Enyart. That's another one. See, the system worked. Whitey Bulger was 89 years old and was beaten to death in prison with a lock in a sock, literally. It's pretty intense, huh? Not surprised the guy would go that way. Whitey Bulger? Well, he was a mafia, an Irish mob guy, and he was an FBI informant. And I've been reading stories all week, and it seems like all of his FBI informing didn't really amount to a hill of beans. It's not like he ever helped them catch anyone who wasn't already an enemy of Whitey Bulger. While he raped and robbed and killed, well, I don't know that he raped. He robbed and killed and dealt drugs and all that. Anyway, what was I going to say about the story? Oh, Whitey Bulger. I just want to point out the contrast between Whitey Bulger and El Chapo. Right? Remember El Chapo? El Chapo's the Mexican drug lord who was captured. I believe he goes on trial starting this week.
What?
Yeah. Now, Whitey Bulger died in prison with no children. He did have one son when he was a young man, but the child died of a childhood illness. So Whitey Bulger had no kids, and so Whitey Bulger's empire is non-existent. It was taken over by some other Irish thugs in South Boston. But El Chapo had at least 15 kids that they can document. And two of El Chapo's sons are now running his drug empire, along with his last girlfriend.
Is that a good or bad?
It's just an... It's not... It's bad. They're both bad. Whitey Bulger's bad. El Chapo's bad. But it just goes to show you the difference between America and the developing... where El Chapo was Mexico, right? I believe he was from Mexico. They still have a lot of kids. Even the drug lords have a lot of kids down there. Up here, forget about it. That was a gangster reference to forget about, right? Anyway. So Whitey was killed after being moved to Hazleton Maximum Security Prison in West Virginia. Oddly enough, in the past 3 months, there have been 3 homicides at Hazleton. And the prison guards union blames chronic understaffing as the problem. That's... chronic understaffing. Maybe that's what can make the system work. Chronic understaffing and mafioso are far more effective than the justice system. How long was Bulger in prison? 2013? 14? Been in there anyway. Let's move on from Whitey Bulger. It's a lock and a sock, huh? So they say that they tried to gouge his eyes out and cut his tongue out, too, because he was a rat. All right. So Bulger is dead. And then now we move on to the populist file. This is a new file. I just made that up right now as I was looking at the headline. Donald Trump, in the wake of the current unpleasantness, let's just put it that way, because here's the thing, ladies and gentlemen. I don't really think there was any political angle to the massacre at the synagogue in Pittsburgh. There just was no political angle. Whether the guy was a Nazi, whether he hated Trump, whether he loved Trump, whether he voted for Hillary, none of that matters. The issues surrounding the massacre at the synagogue are so much more enormous than this most important midterm election of your or my lifetime or our grandchildren's lifetime. The issues surrounding that are just far deeper and meaningful than politics. But never let a crisis go to waste. And I know that that was Rahm Emanuel who said it, but I think most politicians in America today practice it. Yeah, maybe even subconsciously. They don't even have to try. It's just the way things work now. Probably thank Rahm Emanuel for that. Anyway, Trump sent out a tweet Monday after the massacre was on Shabbat on Saturday. And everyone wondered, will Donald Trump tone down his message? Of course he's not going to tone down his message. He is who he is. He sent out this tweet. There is great anger. Can I try to do a Trump impression? She's saying, just no, probably not. Anyway, I've been watching all his rallies and I've been trying to get into it. There is great anger in our country, caused in part by the inaccurate reporting of the fake news. That's awful. Awful. It's like FDR tripped over John F. Kennedy and they were both mumbling. All right. I'm not going to try for a Donald Trump impression. I can't do it, and I don't know why. You know, the thing is if this was my job, then I would take the time to work up a reasonable Donald Trump impression. But it's not my job, so I don't feel the obligation. Donald Trump tweeted this: there's great anger in our country, caused in part by inaccurate reporting of the news. The fake news media, the true enemy of the people, must stop the open and obvious hostility. That will do much to put out the flame of anger and bring peace and harmony. Fake news must end. All right, so here's the thing with Donald Trump. So I was already nice to him about the wall. Glad he's building the wall. But Donald Trump is a dangerous populist and a nationalist who is quite okay with picking a fight. He is quite okay with it. Anyway, I just wish he could focus on America's real enemies with the same measure of energy that he focuses on his political enemies. You know, until he attacks Planned Parenthood more than CNN, I'm not going to give him a pass on any of this stuff. I don't think Trump minds the anger. And the flame of anger that he mentions here, the flame of anger he mentions open and obvious hostility. He uses the term the enemy of the people, which has us. If you're a student of history, even accidentally, you might be familiar with the history of that term. Anyway, I wish he would attack his enemies, my enemies, your enemies, the enemies who actually kill Americans every day. The real killers, the bloodthirsty, maniacal killers who systematically murder thousands of Americans every day, some of them with money provided by a budget signed into law by Donald Trump himself. All right, ladies and gentlemen, wipe the sweat off your brow, and we'll dive into another segment here at the Weekly Worldview. I want to thank everybody for sticking with us. We're going to go to Sully Sullenberger. Sully, you remember Sully? Chesley Sully Sullenberger, who landed the famous Miracle on the Hudson. Right? Everybody remembers him, right? I think he's a great guy. How can you not think that Sully Sullenberger's a great patriotic, great guy? Just a great guy. Well, he wrote an op-ed in the Washington Post this past week saying that this, he says, quote, "This is not the America I know and love." So already you're like, uh-oh, here we go. Which side is Sully going to come down on? Because here's a guy who's actually accomplished things, who everyone in the country respects. Well, here's what he says, or what he said. Quote, "To navigate complex challenges, all leaders must take responsibility and have a moral compass grounded in competence, integrity, and concern for the greater good. Tragically, people in positions in power today are not projecting their best. Many are cowardly, complicit enablers, acting against the interest of the United States, our allies, and our democracy, encouraging extremists at home and emboldening our adversaries abroad, and threatening the livability of our planet." Oh, excuse me, Sully, what was that? Threatening the livability of our planet? Okay. Plus, I noticed, Sully, I don't know why Chesley, I don't know where that comes from. It's like his mom and dad got some letters mixed up or they left some letters out. C-H-E-S-L-E-Y, Chesley. You just go with Sully. Anyway, I noticed that he talks about competence, integrity. He never talks about rights or righteousness. He talks about a concern for the greater good, which leads me to believe that he's something of a secular utilitarian. And he does mention democracy as if it is to be worshipped. He says, he goes on about politicians that he does not name. "Many do not respect the offices they hold. They lack or disregard a basic knowledge of history, science, and leadership, and they act impulsively, worsening a toxic political environment. Current absence of civic virtue should not be normalized. We must rededicate ourselves to the ideals, values, and norms that unite us and upon which our democracy depends. We must be engaged and informed voters." So the values and norms that unite us, Sully. It would have been nice if you would have elucidated what those are. Because without it, this is all just a big fat platitude, meaningless and worthless. Well, I'll elucidate just a few, Sully. How about, let's see, values and norms that unite us. How about what is a boy and what is a girl? I think those are norms that unite us. How about that? How about the definition of marriage? What is marriage, Sully? That would be a norm that would unite us. So that's just a couple. There's a bunch of other ones, but that's just a couple that Sully strategically avoids as he guides his political plane down into the river there. Oh, he ends with, "We cannot wait for someone to save us. We must do it ourselves." All right. And he goes on about Election Day and how important it is, and if you don't vote, and well. We need to vote for leaders who are committed to the values that will unite and protect us. But he never elucidates what those are. All right. How about a norm, Sully? All innocent people, no matter their state of dependency, physical condition, all innocent people deserve the right to life. How about that? All right. Anyway, not to put too fine a point on it. Anyway, Sully, he reminds me of a line out of Proverbs. Proverbs 17, which was appropriated, by the way. We don't know by whom. But Proverbs 17 goes like this. A fool who holds his peace is counted as wise. Right? A fool who holds his peace is counted as wise. I thought Sully was a great guy and probably some kind of genius. Because he landed that plane on the Hudson without getting anybody killed. But he should have just held his peace. It's sort of a twist on that old saying that's attributed variously to Mark Twain. Some people attribute it to Abraham Lincoln. You know, better to remain silent and be thought a fool than to open one's mouth and to remove all doubt. Something like that. For Sully, it would be better to remain silent and appear heroic rather than speak and reveal yourself a fool, which is what Sully's done. It's the livability of the planet thing that drew my attention. All right. And so let's talk about some livability. This comes to us from the Science Really file, where the World Wildlife Foundation has released a report that claims from 1970 to 2014, 60% of all animals with a backbone were wiped out by human activity. 60% of all animals with a backbone were wiped out by human activity. Now, are they actually, from 1970 to 2014, are they just counting the animals that died of old age and just, you know, the natural progression of life and death? Because it would seem to me that a claim that 60% of all animals with a backbone being wiped out, that seems a little high. Maybe I'm skeptical, but that seems a little high. It would seem that there would be a bigger crisis if 60% of the animals with backbones were all wiped out. But that's what WWF says, according to their Living Planet report. Yes. Now listen to this. They say freshwater fauna. Over the past 44 years, the population of freshwater fauna has declined by 80%. Now, that seems a little high, doesn't it? 80% of all the fish in all the streams? Are you sure? 80%?
The tilapia took over.
that's all that's left are tilapia and that steel-headed Chinese monster fish, maybe. I don't know. I don't know where they get these numbers, but count me as doubtful, that's all. Paint me doubtful. They say Latin America, listen to this, Latin America has seen a 90% loss of wildlife over the past 80 years. The last 44 years. Wait a second. 90% of the wildlife in South America have been lost? But they had kids is what. You know, anyway, I don't know where they get these numbers. 90%. All right. I don't know what they're counting. Maybe they don't know what they're counting. Anyway, they claim this is an unfolding mass extinction event that's unfolding right before our eyes. And it's only the sixth mass extinction event in the last half billion years. Yeah, and that's reported as a fact by the French Press Association. He just reports as a fact that there have been six mass extinction events in the last half billion years. Hence, this story comes to us from the Science Really file. One researcher whose future income depends on people being terrified about a mass extinction event, he says the statistics are scary. They're scary. Unlike population declines, extinctions are irreversible. Did you people understand? They're irreversible. He signed his name. That's Piero Visconti, a researcher at the International Institute for Applied Systems and Analysis in Australia, who signed the report along with 59 other co-authors. Whose future incomes similarly depend on governments and really rich, relatively ignorant people being terrified about mass extinction events. Here we go. Some more facts from the report. Heat waves have already wiped out half the globe's shallow water reefs. Okay. Just color me skeptical on that one. Half of the... Okay, half? Really? Okay. And they go on to say, even if humanity manages to cap global warming at 1.5 degrees Celsius, which we've reported on here, even if that happens, mortality of all of the coral reefs on the planet are going to be 70 to 90%. We're going to lose 70 to 90% of all the coral reefs on the planet, even if we hit our global warming goals. Just terrifying, horrifying, shocking. And we just need, you know what we should all do? Tonight, when we say our prayers before bedtime, we should thank God that none of this is true. Because if it was, it would be terrifying. But we should also entreat God to help our political leaders not to be bamboozled by these moronic researchers, these alleged scientists. All right. Now, speaking of all of that, now let's go to the politics file. How does all this global warming insanity affect the real world? Well, the Supreme Court has rejected a bid by the president to block a trial in a lawsuit filed by young activists who have accused the U.S. government of ignoring the perils of climate change. So the children are suing the government because of climate change. Uh-huh. And the reporters here at, where is this? This is the Reuters. They say that the administration is obviously uncomfortable with facing a high-profile examination of U.S. climate change policy. Uh-huh. So 21 kids age 11 to 22 say that the federal government has violated their rights to due process by failing to adequately address carbon pollution from the burning of fossil fuels. The lawsuit was filed in 2015 against the Obama administration. It's oddly enough, it's probably funded by the Obama administration and filed against the Obama administration. The pile of lawyers who are perpetuating the suit are from a Eugene, Oregon-based group called Our Children's Trust. And they claim that their clients have suffered irreparable harm. So, man, the Eugene, Oregon's got to be really proud here. They've got a bunch of lawyers who've got these children convinced that the sky is falling, that they're all going to die young because of climate change. What you got here is a pile of pro-abort, lesbian, and homosexual lawyers. Now, listen, I haven't done any research on the Our Children's Trust out there in Eugene, but I'm willing to bet that the majority of the lawyers involved are pro-abortion, lesbians, and or homosexuals. Okay, that's all. And they say, quote, "This is a case about the fundamental rights of children and whether the actions of the government have deprived them of their inalienable rights." Eugene, Oregon-based federal judge Ann has repeatedly allowed the case to move forward, leaving everyone in Eugene, Oregon simply embarrassed.
Coming now inside.
is if you buy into all this global warming, mass hysteria, mass extinction events over the past half billion years and all of this stuff. You start, you're like Sully Sullenberger. You're concerned about the livability of our planet. Anyway, you just, so you end up, I think it drives, I'm just going to say it. Old Earth evolutionary thought drives racism, hatred, and anger. That's, I believe it, and here, let me just give you an example of what just occurred in Australia on TV in front of God and everybody. Australia's version of 60 Minutes did a story about a family whose, a number of the kids in the family walk around on all fours. And this is a family in Pakistan. And Australia's version of 60 Minutes does a story on them, calls them evolutionary throwbacks because they walk around on all fours. They say in the broadcast, this could be the missing link between men and ape. The Holy Grail scientists have sought for generations. They walk on all fours just as we did 4 million years ago, says the reporter at the Australian 60 Minutes. Now, the narrator then goes on to say, this is a family that could rewrite the evolutionary textbooks. And Professor Nick Humphreys, described as an evolutionary psychiatrist, whatever that is, an evolutionary psychiatrist, he called the family an evolutionary throwback I never expected under the most extraordinary scientific fantasy that modern human beings could return to such an animal state, unquote, said the evolutionary psychologist Nick Humphrey. The narrator also is quoted in the show as saying that the audience is watching living, breathing fossils. And they called it reverse evolution. So anyway, it turns out that this family is suffering from a genetic disorder. They live in a remote village in the southern Hatay province of Turkey. I'm sorry, not Pakistan, Turkey. And they're not evolutionary throwbacks, and they're not in some sort of animal state. They're the victims of a birth defect in their family, and it's awful, and it's terrible, and it's sad is what it is. Anyway, this whole thing's been exposed as a fraud. It was exposed in 2014 by reporters at the London Daily Mail. The family was first observed in 2005, and scientists had been calling them animals for nearly 10 years before physicians associated with an investigation by the Daily Mail pointed out that this is not an evolutionary throwback. These are not animal-like humans. They have a birth defect. You racist monster bastard scum writing these articles. How dare you? They should be drummed out of science for perpetrating such a disgusting libel against this poor family. Anyways, all right. So that's the that was also from the Science Really file. Yeah. All right. So let's move on from science on to suicide, where we go to the decline and fall file, where it is being reported by the Times of London that members of Britain's largest terror cell will be returning to the United Kingdom after being detained in Syria following the fall of ISIS. These are British citizens who went to Syria to fight for ISIS. And for some reason, they've been detained. You don't detain people fighting for ISIS, ladies and gentlemen. That is not a winning strategy. They should be killed, summarily executed with extreme prejudice, anyone caught fighting under that flag. But not only have they been detained, procedures are being followed, and there's a mechanism in place to return them to the United Kingdom. These, by the way, folks, are the jihadi brides of ISIS fighters. These are their British wives, and their children are going to be allowed to come back to Britain because the Europeans in general have lost their minds. Too many generations of syphilitic inbreeding or something has happened to the Europeans. They're obviously insane. They're going to allow the jihadi brides and their kids to return to the United Kingdom, and that's from the Decline and Fall file. Meanwhile, speaking of jihadis, what about the jihadis that Barack Obama befriended? You remember the five Taliban that he exchanged for Sergeant Bo Bergdahl? Do you guys remember that? He's now Private Bo Bergdahl. Is he even in jail? No, he's not in jail. Is he in jail? I can't remember if Barack Obama pardoned him, or was it just the tranny that he pardoned? I can't remember. Anyway, Barack Obama exchanged five high level Taliban for Sergeant Bo Bergdahl. Well, at least three of them now work at the Taliban main office there in Qatar. Qatar. Doha. Qatar. How do you say it? Qatar. Qatar. So anyway, so the Taliban has flourished, apparently, in Qatar. And three of the jihadis now work in their main office. At least three of them are suspected of having re-engaged in jihadi activities. Whatever. Jihadi activities. Okay. So that's not just like, you know, baking cookies for other jihadis. Barack Obama authorized the exchange in 2014. By the way, all seven former prisoners from Guantanamo Bay who were transferred to Qatar are now affiliated with the Afghan Taliban. The Afghan Taliban, which is growing by leaps and bounds there in Afghanistan. The Afghan Taliban is, they're making headway there in Afghanistan. As a matter of fact, didn't I have a story here? Wait a second. Here it is. Here it is. Yeah. The mayor of North Ogden, Utah, Brent Taylor, is a National Guard. Is in the National Guard. He was killed last week during an insider attack in Afghanistan. Another U.S. service member is being treated for wounds sustained in the attack. North Ogden Mayor Brent Taylor was with the Utah National Guard and had previously served two tours in Iraq and one tour in Afghanistan. 39 years old, killed by the Afghan Taliban in an insider attack. Now, we don't know if any of the guys that Barack Obama swapped for Bo Bergdahl were directly involved in the killing of North Ogden Mayor Brent Taylor, but I think it's safe to assume that they were. Because I have a feeling that the Afghan Taliban is not that large of an organization. It's a bunch of inbred maniacs, all hell-bent on Islamist rule in Afghanistan. And for some reason, the Trump administration is negotiating some sort of peace deal with the Afghan Taliban. I don't understand. I guess I feel like Tucker Carlson. I'm confused. I just don't understand. Anyway. Now, meanwhile, I said that we would address the fate of Asia Bibi because it looked really good at the beginning of last week when Asia Bibi was acquitted by the Supreme Court of Pakistan, who said that they threw out the case on the basis of flimsy evidence because there was no evidence. It was all hearsay evidence that she had said something, she had drank. She had done something to insult the Prophet Muhammad. Before you know it, Islamists were butchering one another in the streets and burning down Christians' houses over Asia Bibi and her insult of the Prophet. Mohammed, the sacred, holy, munificent, and all of that. She's been on death row since 2010 on blasphemy charges. She was acquitted this past week. But that set off street protests. And guess what? The Supreme Court acquits her. The Islamists start raging in the streets, starting fires and killing people again. They say the Islamists have now convulsed Pakistan for the past several days, blocking roads, disrupting traffic. To end the protests, the government of Pakistan has agreed to a travel ban that prevents Asia Bibi from leaving the country. Wow. Not only that, they say they're going to allow the Islamist maniacs to file an appeal. So she'll probably be back in jail. She may be back in jail before this weekend is over. Horrifying. Well, her husband has issued an appeal. And here's what he says. This is a Christian couple, by the way, living in Pakistan, which is an Islamist state. It is an Islamic state, I should say. All right. Her husband says, "I request President Donald Trump to help us leave the country. And I request the Prime Minister of the UK to do their level best to help us, to grant us freedom." He says, "My daughters are weeping. They still haven't seen their mother. Our family is totally shattered. And with all the violence and the protests, it's too dangerous for the kids to go see their mother in jail." Oh, she's still in jail. They never even let her out of jail. Maniacs. Maniacs. So anyway, President Trump, I mean, nice job on the wall. But when you tweet out about CNN being the enemy of the people, maybe you could just work in a tweet for Asia Bibi and the Christian woman who's... Maybe you could do that, Mr. Trump. Donald Trump could get her out of the country tonight if he wanted to. And he's proven that he can get results when he decides to do what he decides needs to be done. So I'm hoping that between him and Mike Pence, that phony baloney, I really don't like Mike Pence. I'm really hoping that between the two of them, because you read the story and you can actually feel the fear and the terror. Now, this is real life. These people will be killed. If she were to be let out of jail, she would be mobbed and murdered in the street. In Pakistan, which is some sort of ally of the United States of America, and that I don't get. All right, meanwhile, one last thing from the decline and fall file. A European Human Rights Court has upheld the criminal conviction of an Australian woman. She was convicted of disparaging religious doctrines and fined $500. The court found that they said statements describing Mohammed as a pedophile. That's what the woman said. They said those comments were likely to arouse justified indignation in Muslims and were without any factual basis. Such comments, the court said, are not protected by the freedom of expression provisions of the European Convention of Human Rights. Meanwhile, it's well known that authoritative Muslim texts, according to the reporters at WorldNet Daily, authoritative Muslim texts record the marriage of the Holy Prophet Muhammad to a 6-year-old girl, and the same texts record the consummation of their relationship when she was 9 years old. But at the European Court of Human Rights, they worship rules instead of God. They worship rules instead of worshiping God, to the point where their own stupid rules are going to be used against them to destroy them by the Muslims. Just like America's incoherent rules about letting asylumees just run into the country, those rules will be used against us. So we need to stop worshiping the rules and start worshiping God. Don't give up. back, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for sticking with us. Here as we roll into the final segment. Speaking of rules, let's go to a Tallahassee yoga studio that by all accounts was officially a gun-free zone. But on Friday, a 40-year-old man entered the yoga studio and began shooting patrons. There was a gun free. They had rules against carrying guns.
Ooh, what happened?
But a 40-year-old man who was not observing the rules about not bringing guns into the yoga studio. He shot and killed two women. Nancy Van Vessem, 61 years old. Maura Binkley, 21 years old. He killed them. Then killed himself. Or, according to the French Press Association, he turned the gun on himself and died on the scene from a self-inflicted gunshot wound. Okay. Anyway, let's just move on from that. The gunman had posted on YouTube videos of himself giving violent, racist, and misogynistic speeches. Anyway, I will almost guarantee you, I don't know anything about this fellow, I will guarantee you this guy is an evolutionist. He believes that we evolved from slime and nothing. And when you believe that, it's much easier to just kill people when you have problems. It's a lot easier to kill people when you look at everyone as just animals. So evolutionary thought fosters racism and violence. Violence and racism. And sexism, the strong over the weak, that whole thing. The killing of unborn children has flourished since the acceptance of evolutionary thought and philosophy. And it's the single greatest source of violence in all of human history, is the killing of innocent unborn children, the greatest mass murder in the history of all humanity. You are living through it right now. You know, everybody wants to be a part of something big that goes down in history. Well, you and I are living through something really, really big. The biggest mass murder in all of history is occurring every day right around us while we sit in peace and comfort. And history will judge us for that. All right. Tennessee Mayor Andrew Gillum. He says, no act of gun violence is acceptable. That was his response to the slaughter of innocent people in a gun-free yoga studio. So, anyway, I wouldn't mind him politicizing the killing, but he politicizes it in an incorrect application. Having to blame the gun first. He even called it gun violence. Anyway. All right. So let me address something real quick about the massacre at the. So they call Reform Judaism calls themselves conservative. So that's something of a misnomer. And I think it's intentional, by the way. I think it's intentional. I did a good bit of research. The society that ordained the rabbi, if I don't know what they call it in Judaism, but they ordained the rabbi at the Tree of Life synagogue there in Pittsburgh. That organization is a highly liberal, pro-abortion, pro-homosexual, very left-wing. It wouldn't be considered conservative in any way. And it's called the Conservative Jewish Theological Seminary, something like that. It actually has the word conservative in its name. And when you go on their website, they're anything but conservative. Now, not that they deserve to be shot and killed. Don't get me wrong. Just because they're a bunch of liberals, they don't deserve to be shot and killed. But this massacre in the Jewish synagogue, this should be a wake-up call to religious people of all stripes across the country. Because it is us, the religious people, who bear the responsibility for the bloodshed. Because You know, organized religion has at the very, well, they have enabled and fueled a society of bloodshed. The politicians leading America could never have made the murder of children legal without the complicity of the religious leaders. There could have never been a backdoor deal made where now we let child molesters and murderers live for we don't execute them anymore. That could never have happened without the complicity of the religious leaders. Jews and Christians, let's just focus on America. Jews and Christians, the leadership is complicit in this. People want to know who's to blame for the elevation of violence and tension and bloodshed. Well, it's primarily laid at the feet of the religious leaders. Most of the religious leadership in Judaism and in Protestantism have at the very least covered your eyes and your mouths, and you've just been tolerant and silent. And in the case of so many Reformed synagogues and mainline Protestant churches, you've actually participated in, celebrated, and even funded mass murder and mass child molestation in the form of promotion of homosexuality and sexual immorality in general. You haven't just been, at the least, you've been tolerant and silent and scared. But more and more, you celebrate it, you support it, you participate in it, you fund it. At your places of worship. And then just lay on that for the Catholics first, but for the Protestants also. I mean, the Catholics have outright perpetuated the greatest sexual molestation of children. Actual molestation. Probably the greatest case of serial child molestation in the history of mankind has occurred over the past century in the Catholic Church. And the Protestants have just all gone gay. They're tangentially molesting the children. Well, this massacre should serve as a wake-up call. And from every pulpit in the country, on a Sunday not too far from now, the pastor and the rabbi and the priest, they need to stand up. And they need to tell the people that the sanctuaries of our houses of worship are filled with guilt and shame and innocent blood. And it's figurative right now. It's symbolic right now. But if there's no call to repentance, our sanctuaries will literally be filled with blood. They will literally be filled with blood and carnage and fear and dead bodies and screaming and terror, literally. Because the blood and the guilt of the millions killed cries out to God for justice. And justice will be visited upon the guilty. It will be. Justice will be visited upon the guilty. God will not restrain his anger forever. And the only escape is repentance. And there should be mass weeping and crying and asking for the mercy of the living God. That's what a massacre like this should make us think of first. Instead of how it affects the midterms and if it's hurting any particular governor's momentum or if any particular president, if their poll numbers are going to go up or down, maybe that makes good radio. I don't think so myself, but that's what I hear everywhere. But this should make us wonder what is happening in our society that so many people who have some sort of argument with others decide to kill them. And in a mass massacre like this, what is happening in our society that leads to that? That did not used to happen. Almost never. That almost never used to happen, and it happens all the time now. And I don't think it has all that much to do with... I think it has less to do with anti-Semitism than it does with someone raised to believe he evolved as an animal from nothing and is going nowhere. Although that leads to anti-Semitism, or it makes anti-Semitism seem natural. All right, that's... what should I do? Well, you know what? We'll close with this, because we'll go to a civilization, a society, a country, where everybody was officially an atheist, the Soviet Union. So the Soviet Union, back in 1968, founded a research facility in Antarctica. And for those of you who matriculated in the public schools, Antarctica is on the bottom of the world. It's the southernmost landmass, and it's cold there. 1968, at the height of the Soviet Union, they installed a research facility, and I want to get the name of it here. Well, anyways, so it's been occupied by Russian researchers on and off for the past 50 years. And a couple of fellows had been working there this year. 52-year-old Oleg Belaguzov was working with 55-year-old Sergei Savitsky. And Sergei had taken to reading a lot of books in order to pass the time down at the isolated research facility. And he had taken to drinking. Well, the fellow he was working with, Oleg, got into the habit of spoiling Sergei's reading adventures by revealing to him the end of the books that he was going to read. That's pretty rotten, right? That's just a rotten, horrible thing to do. Oleg is obviously a jerk. So what do you do when you have a problem with a jerk? Well, in the case of Sergei, he chose to plunge a kitchen knife into Oleg's chest over the spoiling of the books. And, well, the thing is Sergei and Oleg, they were raised in a society where everyone was an atheist, and Darwin ruled. The strong kill the weak and all of that. So instead of having it out, maybe having an argument, maybe figuring out a way to keep your books away from Oleg so he can't ruin them for you, instead of finding some creative solution, the Darwinian solution is to plunge a kitchen knife into his chest and kill him. Well, he didn't kill him. The jerk who got stabbed is expected to survive. But Western civilization, that survival is somewhat questionable. But we'll keep working on that, ladies and gentlemen, along with you. We appreciate you tuning in. I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com and at American Right to Life. And, of course, my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen here in the Weekly Worldview Studios. Should the Lord tarry, we will return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you. And may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.